Welcome to the Conversations Podcast. We are continuing our series called Anchored, looking at the book of Ephesians. We're in Ephesians 6 now, and I'm joined by two special guests and friends. First, we're joined by teaching pastor Sean Stover, the doctor, Sean Stover. Sean, welcome back to the podcast.
Good morning. Thanks.
And we're joined by kids pastor Scarlett Kiowski. Scarlett, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, we are talking about parenting, so who better to have than y'all two on the podcast to talk about this? Sean, would love to give you the first word. We've been talking, you've spoken before through the Anchored series, so I'd love to have your thoughts on just kind of like what your thoughts are of the series, and then as we dive into parenting itself.
Together, Scarlett and I have, you know, 7+ kids or so that could probably say there are better people to talk about parenting than us.
Some are like half.
I appreciate you giving us the credit for being the right people to talk to. This is a fun topic, though. I love parenting. I love being a dad. It's one of my favorite things to do in the world. It's been one of the most sanctifying things, meaning it's brought me closer to Jesus, taught me more about God and how He loves me, taught me what it looks like to obey and submit to His leadership and pray, more in my parenting than anywhere else in my life. And so to be able to speak on parenting is an honor, and the fact that it just fell that way. I love when we work through a book of the Bible like we are right now through Ephesians, and just happened to get to Ephesians 6 when it was my time to get up there and speak. So
that's right.
Worked out great.
Well, you did a great job. Scarlett, would love to know your thoughts, not just on Sunday, but just even the series as a whole, just this concept of being anchored as a parent, just being anchored in our families and why that's so important.
Yeah, I, of course, love being a mom. It's one of my most favorite things that I get to do. And like you, Sean, it's so refining, so humbling. I've learned so much about God's grace, God's love, His mercy for me, for my kids, my family. But yes, I like also love going through a book of the Bible and breaking it down. And I think teaching that we need to be anchored in Jesus in every area of our life is so incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this passage in Ephesians 6, just like the passage right before that we looked at in marriage, Paul is writing to two different groups here, and it's all related here. So he talks to the children and the relationship that we have with our parents and how we honor our parents. So I'd love to start there. And then he addresses the children and, or sorry, then addresses the parents and how they relate to the children. So this first idea here of speaking to the children and how we honor our father and mother. I know those that are listening can be at various seasons of their life. Maybe their parents, maybe they're, you know, younger, and so their parents are still have a more active role in their life. Sometimes their parents may be aging or getting older, and so there's kind of that looks a little differently. I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on just how we practically honor our parents, just to, even depending on the stage of life that we're in.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool that Paul highlighted two concepts there, obedience and honor, and both of them are significant. No matter where we are in our life, I think that obedience is a important concept. It's something our culture doesn't really like to talk about a lot. We're much more interested in being rebellious and independent and self-driven as opposed to being obedient to something. So I think even the idea of honoring, it starts first with obedience. And it's like, are you willing to submit yourself, which is the word Paul used earlier in Ephesians 5, are you willing to submit yourself to somebody else and somebody else that's in a position of authority over you and has a relational responsibility to care for you? So that idea of obedience, I think, is something we've got to start by getting our mind around, because just like submission can be a setting off kind of word for people, obedience can as well. And yet there's just so much freedom when we're willing to obey. It's the opposite of what you think. It's not restricting. It's actually freeing when you know what the rules are, you know what's expected of you. And God's done a great job in the Bible of laying that out for us of what it looks like to be obedient. And I think for us as adults, we need to be obedient to God. And then we get to model that for our kids, because boy, there's a huge difference when you're around kids that are obedient and when you're around kids that aren't. And not only their demeanor and how they act, but also in how you respond to them.
Yeah, I think about you know, being my age and having parents who are older and how to honor them. You know, I look back at my upbringing and, you know, of course they weren't perfect by any means, but I'm able to grace them, love them, and honor them and set that example for my kids. And I feel like my husband does that well with his parents. So I think that's another place we find honor as well.
Yeah. That word, to your point, Sean, both of y'all speaking to this, but just our culture can really either redefine the word honor or diminish the word honor. We went through a shameless plug for the summer series. We went through the One Another's and someone gave a talk on honor one another. I can't remember. Oh, wait, it was Sean. But Sean, you did a great job speaking to that and just this idea that this is something just even in my generation, I'll own up to it, is that we have not been taught how to do this well. We kind of, especially whether it's in the tech world or just all these latest and greatest trends, that usually something like honor, especially honoring a previous generation or someone that's older, that just seems, you know, almost archaic or just kind of out of touch. So practically, I know we're speaking in the sense of honoring our own parents, but just how do we as believers maybe redefine what honor looks like or define it for ourselves compared to the way that we're defined by the culture?
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me about teaching on that, because I can recall a few things that I said. And one is this idea of honor being holding something in high esteem or high regard. And I think we've got to get back to where we revere, people with more experience in our society that, you know, lived a few more years, that have experienced a few more things. If you do that, then you realize that there's wisdom there. And we're not a wisdom-driven culture anymore. We're an information-driven culture. Meaning, I'm going to Google this and figure out what somebody said, or I know this influencer that's got some thoughts on this. I'm going to go back and look at what they had to say. That's information. Wisdom comes from living a life and experiencing the things that life throws at you and wrestling with God through different seasons and understanding how His word and His truth apply in your life. And that's really what the Bible wants us to do. It calls us to that in Proverbs, to seek wisdom. And that's what you get when you honor folks in your life and around you, is you get a chance to then experience the wisdom that they have to share. I mean, I love sitting, you know, and just asking Scarlett what she thinks. Even when I teach, I've asked her before we did a parenthood series, and I said, hey, what were some of your thoughts on that? Because she has a lot of wisdom. She has experience, and I want to honor her for that and the role she has here at the church. But it definitely is clear in the Bible, multiple times in the New Testament, it's the fifth commandment, we're supposed to honor our parents. And whether they did an amazing job at parenting you or less than an amazing job, honor, holding in high esteem. It's not about the behavior of what they did. It's about the position of who they are. And I love the idea and the thought of us being really intentional about honoring our parents.
I was just about to ask both of y'all that, because Scarlett, I know you mentioned it. We all feel this way where we had great parents that raised us and yet they were imperfect. And so for someone listening, it's like, okay, if you're calling me to honor my parent, but you don't know my parent. You don't know maybe the wounds or the hurts that I still carry about them or the things that they did that they regret or that I regret. So how do we, I think just even pressing a little bit deeper there, but how do you honor someone that has not been perfect, that has hurt you or wronged you in some way, particularly with parents, but just I think in anyone in your life?
Yeah, I think that's when we have to walk in forgiveness. And we have to see our parents as broken people and hurting people and, you know, process the hurt and the pain, forgive them, love them, give them back to Jesus, and just walk in a place of surrender.
I love that you tied that to forgiveness, Scarlett, because I think there is a similarity in that God calls us to forgive because it's best for us, right? Not necessarily because it lets somebody else off the hook. And similarly, He calls us to honor, not so much even because of what it does for the other person, but because of what it does for us. When we put ourselves in a place to honor, we actually can find maybe something positive. There was a bunch our parents maybe did wrong, but I can honor that one thing that they did, or I can honor how they provided the home for me, or I can honor how they did the best they could with what they knew. And then sometimes, in the hardest of cases, I will say this. Sometimes the only thing you can do to honor is just to not dishonor. Mm. So it may not be that you can find something positive in some accolade or some way to affirm, But the least you could do is to not dishonor, not find ways to trash your parents, or we'll blame everything on my parents. Or now again, Scarlett just said it really well. You need to get healing and do the work that's needed. All that's absolutely true. But it doesn't do you any good to run around through life telling everybody how terrible your parents were and how they didn't do this or didn't do that. That's dishonoring, which is certainly what that commandment's getting at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. This commandment also comes with a promise. It mentions that in Ephesians 6, 2 through 3, as well as the fifth commandment of the 10 commandments here, where it says that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. And so, Sean, I know I loved how you spoke on Sunday about that, where it's even not just like an individual promise as much as a collective promise. And so I'd love for you maybe just to share a little bit more about that, and then we can kind of jump into just what that promise means for us as believers and practically living that out.
Yeah. Well, on the first level, Taylor, you are very good at honoring your elders and people that are older than you. So you probably will live to be 100 and something. You're always very honoring of me, and I appreciate it. But really, Paul there is speaking to the fact that if we have a culture that honors elders and honors parents, it creates, and we obey, children obey parents, it creates a solid family structure that then creates a solid community. And then that solid community spreads out and creates a solid culture around it. And societies, it's just historically proven, separate it from the Bible if you want, it's historically proven that societies with healthy families thrive and continue for long periods of time. And when the home falls apart, when there's dishonor in the home, when there's disobedience in the home, when dads are absent and moms and dads aren't staying together, cultures don't survive. Civilizations don't survive very long at all when that's the case. So Paul's just hitting on a biblical truth there. The commandment, actually, when it was first quoted in the Old Testament, was referring to Israel and God wanting Israel to be strong because he wanted the family unit to be strong. Paul generalizes it out to say it's not just Israel, though. It's every family unit can thrive.
Yeah, I love that we're given a bit of an explanation or kind of a why. Why is this important? Why does this matter? And, you know, with honoring your father and mother comes peace and good relationship and wholesome relationship. And like you said, Sean, when that part of your family is broken, it filters into community and beyond. And so making that a priority is huge.
That's good.
When there's trouble in our house, Carl, you guys probably don't ever experience any chaos in your house. But when there is in our house, it affects everything else I do.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I'm thinking I'm not going to live very long. I'm probably not. Yeah. I mean, Christina and I aren't where we need to be maritally, or the kids are in a bad spot. And it really does. I mean, you just think individually how much it affects you. It makes sense that it probably has an impact on our health, on our longevity, and on our culture.
For sure.
Yeah, that's good. Let's jump over to verse 4, the last verse of this passage, where it says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in discipline and instruction of the Lord." And we'll kind of take this in two pieces here. Sean, you talked on Sunday about provoking to anger, and you gave a few examples. I would love to just even take a little bit extra time that we have here to maybe, they can be purely hypothetical or maybe personal stories in your life of how this has looked. And I mean, y'all two are such good processors. So what would be the bigger root as you dig down and you've realized what was kind of that source of the provoking that you caused in your children?
Well, that's a fun question to answer. You know, for me, so much of, you know, for lack of a better word, the ugly that comes out in my parenting is deeply rooted in childhood hurt. And so I even had a child, one of my girls called me out on a behavior that was out of line this last week, and I snapped back at her because I do not like being called out. And I had to circle back around and, you know, in turn, I tore her down. I was upset with her, and I had to go back and explain to her why that triggered me the way that it did, why I responded the way that I did. And her response was, "Oh, I didn't know that." You know, and so it was sweet because there got to be healing in that moment, reconciliation in that ugliness and in our sin.
Thanks for sharing that. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one on the list for sure. That idea of, you know, not dealing with our own stuff or needing to deal with our own stuff. And when we don't, and I agree with Scarlett, that's where all of my ugliness in my parenting comes as well. I grew up in a home where we didn't process our feelings very much, and we didn't look deeply at things. We just kind of got over it. It was like, we'll figure this out. We'll get over it. It'll all be fine. And we had this incredible optimism in my house growing up, but it didn't allow anybody to sit in what they were feeling or really even experience it. And I did that in our home a lot, which was very damaging. We were processing in with a group of folks last night about this. And another thing that was significant for me that I got people off track in my family with was, instead of addressing the behavior, I would address them. Like, I wouldn't separate their identity from the behavior in my kids, you know? And so there's a part of me that's like, well, I know why you're doing that. Your mom always did that. You're just like your mom, and y'all are, you know, and instead of just saying, hey, I know who you are. You're an amazing encourager. You really love people well. So when you're talking to your brother like that, it's not in line with who you are, and you can't do that. And then I discipline the behavior of the conflict between them, but I've affirmed the identity and who he is. I didn't do that well at all early on in my parenting. And I think I really hurt my kids and provoked them to anger. Or the other mirror verse to that was in Colossians 3, where it says you can dishearten your kids or discourage your kids. I definitely did a lot of that in my parenting.
Do y'all feel like, I'm put you on the spot here again, but do y'all feel like it gets easier over time? Or, I mean, because I feel like you're almost parenting so many different versions of one child because of the different stages of growth and development. And also, does it get easier? Does it get more complex? Like, how have you just, even in your own parenting journey, seen this in this topic of kind of anger and provoking?
I mean, I think in some ways it gets easier because, you know, now we've been working at this together for a while. And so it's like they know my stories, they know my past, they know my hurts. And so I feel like in some ways it is easier, and they mature as, you know, they grow up. And so that also helps the process. But I think, you know, the main thing here is remaining authentic and remaining humble. And it really goes a long way with your kids because they see, oh, they're not perfect. And I hope when they leave the house, they're not surprised that I'm not perfect. They know now that I'm not perfect, you know?
I'm just thinking about you being perfect. I didn't know that you weren't.
Yeah,
so thank you for
big news.
Just confirming news. That now. Cypress Creek Church kids pastor, not perfect.
Nope, not okay. Even close.
Good to know. I think this, I've been watching lately, thinking a lot about parenting, and I think that there are some people that are really great at parenting younger kids. Like, they're just naturally amazing at like the 0 to 10-year-old range, and there's no such thing for them as terrible twos or hard things because they just eat it up. They love it. They love being. And then there's other groups of people that are actually really good at parenting 11 to, you know, 18-year-olds. And they're like, okay, great. Now we're dealing with emotional things and relational things and verbal things, and we can talk through this. And it's rare that you see somebody that's good at both of those, honestly, because I think we've either got to learn one of the. I wasn't very good with the younger ones. Christina was amazing. And then I'm a psychologist, so I love talking to teenagers and helping them work through the junk that they're going with, where other people would be like, oh, golly, when they be their teenagers, you won't want to be their parent. That's terrible. And I've loved every second of that. So I don't know if we get. I hope it gets easier because I hope we're getting better. The problems just change as they get older. The things that you have to address and the energy it takes emotional energy as opposed to physical energy as they get older.
The second part of this verse in verse 4 says, and bring them up in discipline and instruction of the Lord. And I feel like we could camp out here and have a whole nother series and a bunch of different messages that go with this because there's so much to this. Sean, you brought up a list of 10 ways that we, you know, cannot do this well, and then 10 ways that we can do this well, and just what that looks like, even if you're not a parent listening, but just when it comes to investing in future generations and just whether it's in kids, student ministry, college, and beyond. So I think maybe my first question in this topic is just more like, how do we, one thing we talked about in parenthood was just how this is stuff that you won't get in the culture. This won't just like naturally pop up on your social media or you'll see on TV. I mean, the world has its own definitions of how to parent or what it looks like. So how, just as a believer listening that is wanting to continue to grow in this practical aspect of, okay, how do I bring them up in the instruction of the Lord? How do I bring them up in biblical discipline? Where do they go? What does that look like for y'all? What has that looked like? What's worked? And just kind of where would be some good next steps for them?
Let me try to answer those 8 questions you just asked. So the thing that struck me the most as I studied this, because I didn't know this before, and I've read this verse many, many times, is that when Paul says, bring them up, he's actually speaking to this idea of gently nurturing them. And I usually skipped over the bring them up to get to the discipline and instruction, because those words seem more powerful to me. Like, as a parent, I need to be doing discipline instruction. But the text is really clear. Paul says, most importantly, you need to be gently nurturing. And then in that, you should instruct and discipline. And I think the fact that he included both of those concepts in one small sentence or half of a sentence is important for all of us. I was talking to my son-in-law the other day, and he's got our 2 granddaughters, and they're 3 and 1. And I said, well, what about you, man? What's something that you're learning about parenting? And he said, sometimes Bowen, she's 3, sometimes she will do things that, you know, are dangerous, and she knows she's not supposed to be doing it. And you could tell she knows she's not supposed to be doing it, which is where I wanted to jump in and say, well, that's her grandma. That's Christina. That's what she does. But I didn't. I just listened. And he said, and then she actually gets hurt in the process. Something happens, like it, something falls on her, or, you know, she gets stuck out, you know, whatever the case is. And he said, everything inside me wants to go discipline that behavior and say, well, if you hadn't have done that, then that, but what she needs from me, I'm learning, is for me to go comfort her first and hold her until she's done crying and she's through hurting and she feels safe again. And then I can say to her, hey, listen, you know you're not supposed to be doing that. And this is what happens. This is the consequence. And I thought, wow, that dude is pretty mature for that age, because he just, he got it. He got what Paul was trying to say. And I think that's the power in this, is how do you balance being gently nurturing while still applying discipline and instruction? And I don't know. I'm still learning, Scarlett.
I mean, I think back to a story my husband told me as a little boy. I wrote about this in the devotionals. His mom would write scripture on a napkin and put it in his lunch. And it was so embarrassing for him. You know, it was like, how quickly could I throw this away? I don't want anyone to see it. But now, as we parent our kids, he has all those scriptures memorized, and he will just spit them out, and he uses those to train up our kids and raise our kids. And so I love that so much, and I just think this is so good and so important and so true, that our kids need clear instruction, clear direction, clear guidelines. They're too young to be trying to make these decisions on their own, and they need us to show them every step of the way. And that discipline piece, I mean, that's the perfect example of how you discipline well and how you love well. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I'm thinking there's probably people listening, Taylor, that are like, all right, we're hearing from the parents, but man, you know what we would love is to have a young man, one of our kids grow up to be a young man that's in his 20s and getting to early 30s, that's pursuing the Lord and faithful in his walk like you are. So what do you think your parents did in this area of gently nurturing and instruction discipline? What did they do to help you get where you are?
Oh, I should have seen this coming. But no, I think there's a lot of things that I really admire and appreciate about my parents. One, I mean, my dad was a pastor, is still a pastor, and so I grew up in the church and was there often. But I think the part that I got to see more than anything was that their faithfulness and their serving. So they loved their church, they served their church. I saw their love for God. So yeah, I think there's so many things that I probably don't even remember or fully know, the conscious decisions they made of things that they allowed us to do, things they didn't allow us to do. There's so much of that that it'd really be great just to ask them. But I think for me, I just see that faithfulness. I see the way that they prioritize their life and the way they prioritize their marriage and then us as kids and just how all that. So I think just when I look back at our schedule growing up, I look back at how, not that this is practical for everyone, but we had dinner together as a family every single night, like every single night. I even remember in sports and stuff like that, but like that was just something that I thought was normal. And then I get to college and people are like, you did what? Like I can't tell you the last time our parents got together. So it's just little things like that that I think, and they sought out wisdom from other people and mentors in their life and just really tried to prioritize and make that important. So that's, I think, so that's good. That's the model.
Thanks for sharing that. I think what you're highlighting there, just to answer the question you ask us about how do you do this, is it sounds like you're saying that rather than any one specific time they sat down and said something to you, you felt like there was a culture in your home. And that culture was about faithfulness. That culture was about service to your church and your community. That culture was about, you know, togetherness around the table. And so they probably didn't have the values written on the wall, but they had them in their heart and they lived them out, and they created a culture that you grew up in so that you could see God's principles being lived out. And I think that's really the bigger answer for me, is like, we could probably give you a few tips on this is specifically how to discipline in this moment, or this is specifically the instruction you should give here. But the reality is, the bigger thing that your kids are going to learn from is the culture they grew up in. Like, what's the culture of your home? What's it feel like to be in your house? Is it a safe place? Is it focused around the Lord? And do you go to Him in prayer as opposed to going to the internet when you need help with something? Do they see you in community with other believers and fellowshipping so that you can grow in your faith? And I would ask you to think about that if you're listening to this, is what's the culture of our home? And is it what we want it to look like, or are there things, places we want it to look more like where we think God would want us to be?
Yes, that's so good. Lastly, I want to just ask both of y'all, Sean, I love the illustration that you gave, the story you shared about the anchor and being on the boat. At first, you know, he diving down and placing the anchor, and then later being able to attach the anchor to the buoy, or I forget what it was called, but the floating anchor.
Mooring ball, yeah.
Yes, and just how that illustration for parents, how as parents, y'all get to be that floating anchor that the children initially tap onto. And that, I think about whether it's the things I heard at Parenthood or others. I'm a guy who loves the practical stuff. So Sean, when you were like, we could give you tips, I'm like, oh, I love that kind of stuff. I eat it up. And I could see this is maybe just my own.
I gave you a list of 10, top 10.
That's true. We won't have to go through all that. But I think about just in other areas of life and just my Christian walk where I love to tag on just to the practical, okay, do's and the don'ts. And just, I think as parents, there could be some listening that they go, okay, I don't really have this figured out, but let me just at least try to figure out something for my kids. But I just love that example that as parents, you have to be anchored in Christ first and then be able to be that anchor for children. I think sometimes as parents, it's tempting just to skip being anchored yourself and just try to, well, as long as I get my kids in the youth group or kids involved in different things on Sunday mornings, like they'll hear it from the amazing kids pastor and kids team, or they'll hear it from Johnny and our students. And so they then kind of offload that onto others. So I'd love for both of y'all just to kind of, as we close, to speak to the significance of personally being anchored as a parent and why it's worth the hard, dirty, and tough work to make that happen before being able to allow that for your kids.
Yeah, I think you described it just right. The hard, dirty work that it takes to like deal with your stuff to be a good parent. But yeah, I think the most important thing we can do as parents is be anchored in Christ, like you said, and die to ourselves. And that's the hardest part, dying to what we want to do, to our schedules. You have to die to yourself and your marriage. And if you are actively doing that and actively pursuing Jesus, His word and His spirit is enough, and He will guide you and direct you on how to love your kids and how to raise them. It's all in the word. The word teaches us how to love. The word teaches us how to have good relationship. The word teaches us how to forgive. And so we just need to be good at going to that, even no matter where we are, whether we're in a good place or a not good place, start with that and just continue to go back to Jesus and continue to do the work that He requires of us to be healthy and whole in Him and to walk in that righteousness. And then I think once you do that, the overflow is good fruit in your family, good fruit in your kids and your marriage. And it's not always fun, but it's worth it.
So good. I agree with everything that Scarlett just said. Five practical things. Here you go, Taylor. You can write them down. Five things if you want to be a great model to your kids in this area of being anchored and create the kind of anchor they can attach to. Number one, you need to pray. You need to be praying for your kids. They need to know you're praying for your kids. You need to ask them, hey, what can I be praying for you about if you don't know already? Or if you're going to know what's going on probably. So just say, hey, I've been praying for you about this. Pray with them. Second, read your Bible. They need to see you reading your Bible. They need to know what you're reading in your Bible. You need to say, this is what I've been reading. Number three is worship. You need to play some worship music every now and then. I know you probably love that old Texas country or whatever 70s, you know, rock that you like, but, and that's fine. I listen to all that too, but they need to see you worshiping in music and in how you live your life. Four, they need to see you fellowshiping with other believers. You need to be a part of a community group, and they need to know why you're a part of it, because I need to be around other believers and fellowship. The Bible tells me to, and I get built up in that way. And fifth, they need to understand a little bit about Sabbath and what it means to stop and rest and recharge with the Lord and not just live life at the pace that the world is living in. And if you take those five and you anchor yourself as a parent in those five disciplines and practices, you're going to be so solid, and your kids are going to see you as a solid place that they can hold on to as well.
Thanks for listening to the Conversations podcast. Be a part of the conversation by sending questions about the Sunday message directly from ccc.guide or by emailing conversations@cypresscreekchurch.com. See you back for the next conversation.